And I, so my name is Brennan. I'm with the Cincinnati Interfaith Worker Center, and we are a worker rights group, and we work on kind of local policy changes. Often in coalition with the labor movement and the environmental movement. So it's going to be a little off topic, but just 30 seconds, I will tell you about a campaign we had several years ago with a temporary haul. There were workers who were coming to our daily bread for our regular, which is kind of a, you get around and talk about issues you're facing if you're working at a temporary haul. And we had a little like support group, kind of, where people could talk about those issues at Our Daily Bread. And someone came in who was sorting recyclables at the Rumpke facility, and they said, well, what can we do about the rats on the line? And so our group and the members and activists got together and started to work on the project. We found out that there were minimum wage violations going on there, and we started to report out about the minimum wage violations for the folks at the recycling facility. Come to find out, at these different, we went to a Blue Green Alliance meeting, and we said, hey, you know, we want to tell everybody, hey, what's going on down there at the recycling facility is this predominantly African-American workforce is not even being paid minimum wage at the recycling facility, and hey, Sierra Club, you should know about this. And they said, well, you should know that they're not being paid right, because the Sierra Club knows all about that recycling agreement. We've been studying it back and forth because it's a crappy agreement, because it's not incentivizing recycling, and we know that it requires living wage, which is $10 an hour, not the $7.25 minimum wage that you guys are celebrating. And it was at that point that this group, we started working together with the Sierra Club to totally rewrite the contract for the recycling, to make sure that temporary workers who were sorting recycled were getting paid. And we just ran the numbers, and it's $1.5 million and counting in wage increases since the ordinance was passed till today, for between the minimum wage, which is what people were being paid, and the living wage, which is what is being paid to the temporary workers out at the Rumpke recycling facility. Which is to say, and the Sierra Club could never have gotten that recycling contract change without being in coalition with labor and the community groups who were bringing forth this issue, and the labor groups could never have gotten it over without the Sierra Club. So that's just a little story of like an accidental, you know, community benefit agreement where the two parts of the community who really had something they were trying to achieve with respect to this recycling contract were able to do it because they did it in coalition. So basically, a community benefits agreement takes large development projects and subjects them, because you get the political power to subject a large-scale development agreement to a community input process where the developer signs a contract where they agree to get the development project, that they will deliver on whatever the community benefits are that the community brings forward. So those types of things can include, and the handout is really good. It just says the developer commits that, you know, community well, let me see. There's a list here. Some other cities do this, right? We have done it in Cincinnati with the banks, and I'll maybe turn it over to Pat for you to talk about, what the process was like with the banks, and then maybe talk about what, because I mean, basically, you get the political will together to get a coalition to identify the community benefits in an ordinance that then the developer has to include the community at the table and incorporate the benefits that are called out in the ordinance in whatever development agreement gets hashed out. So, and then it's enforceable. You can make it happen.
Who gets the developer to sit down?
We do. I mean, we go, well, you would pass an ordinance or pass a resolution requiring that a development deal incorporate a community benefits agreement process. And then the process lays out the types of things that the developer has to do to meet with the community. And then the community itself has input into what the development agreement is going to look like. And it can bargain for things like levels of affordable housing, It can bargain, the community can bargain for things like job access and job quality and training programs. It can bargain for grocery stores in the vicinity of the development. And these are things that are part of a, like different parts of the, like, you know, left coalition, right? There is one, can actually get together and say, no, we're coming together to demand these things if we're gonna be giving away major development projects. So, and to get, like, in isolation, maybe you could get a couple of things for affordable housing. But it's, I think my view is, what's amazing about these community benefit agreements is it forces parts of the more progressive side of the political spectrum to get together and agree on what they're gonna demand from a development and make the city look like what we want it to. And we should have the votes to push this stuff if we're working together. And Pat, I'm done talking.
I'm sorry, is the ordinance citywide, or is just one particular ordinance for one particular project? You said there's an ordinance involved, so you don't have an ordinance that's citywide for all projects. So
there's two different ways to go. You can do project specific, but there are other cities that have ordinances that set projects above a certain level. Then they have to use a community benefits process in order to get approval. Mm-hmm. So for the Schiller property, we could get together and say we want a resolution that there will be no continuation of the preferred developer agreement, and that any future agreement would be subject to a community benefits process and lay out what the process is. And all you have to do is go down there and get 5 votes.
And part of it, right, I think commonly in other cities, the way it's been done, it's for big projects, right? It's for like, oh, we're building a new stadium, and it's gonna bring all these jobs, and it's gonna be so great, and the community has wisened up to the fact that, like, those jobs don't typically go to people who are most directly impacted by that development, right? Right. So it's a way of saying, okay, great, it's gonna bring how many jobs? You give us a figure, and we're gonna give you a percentage of that figure that has to go to people either in this geographic region or people of this race or people of this, you know, of this income level or of minorities or women, whatever, right? Like, you can dictate, you negotiate those terms. But essentially, right, without the CBA, right, you've got a developer that's over here. The developer is cutting a direct deal with the city, right? And the community partners are not involved in that process. They're only involved up to, and for those of us who have been to community council meetings and seen how this plays out, right? Like, the frustration on the community side is when all this development stuff comes through the pipeline, and the only say a community has is whether or not to, like, give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down, like, before there's any even detail attached to it. Like, that's almost the only community input you have, right? So this basically, it changes the terms of that. So it's tricky because I think it's most easily implemented for those large-scale development projects. But I would say one question mark is, like, how could this be leveraged for, say, something like a preferred developer agreement in this city? Or if the city has so much city-owned property that they're interested in developing, could you attach a CBA, say, to all city-owned property within city bounds, right? Like, that anybody who gets a bid on city-owned property goes through this public process, right? Like, there are questions about how else it could be leveraged, and there are creative ways it's been leveraged in other cities, if that makes some sort of sense.
We can also leverage that community approval without getting an ordinance first, just saying this is what we want, and we may not be able to get the most ambitious measures that you could get with an ordinance, but, you know, it's moving too fast for us to wait for an ordinance. So being able to say, you know, these are the things that are going to help you get an easy approval from our community council,
right,
is the approach that we're looking at now.
Yeah.
But it would be impressive to.
One thing I think that's tricky at the city now is that I think officially the city does not necessarily, like, what the community council votes is not necessarily binding at the city level. But it, sure. So you're right. You can put pressure on that way. A resolution would just be one criticism or one challenge with CBAs is, like, how much teeth do they have? And that totally depends on how they're negotiated and what the groundwork is in terms of how they're laid out, right? If you got a resolution passed to begin with, then it's a more binding situation, right? It's got a little bit more teeth. But there are definitely ways to exert that pressure in coalition without needing to pass that resolution, right? You could still do a similar process. Okay.
So, yeah.